From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Lord Kitchener dies of a rare blood disease in a Trinidad hospital. Yet another crisis in the Caribbean banana industry. And South Africa remembers the 10th anniversary of Nelson Mandela's release. I'm Emma Joseph and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Lord Kitchener has died of a rare blood disease in a hospital in Mount Hope. He was 77. Born Alwyn Roberts, Kitchener was admitted to the Eric Williams Medical Center 11 days ago and was diagnosed as having multiple myeloma, a terminal illness which led to severe infection and kidney failure. Tony Fraser looks back at the life of the man who became crowned the Grand Master of Calypso.
There are those who would argue that Rainorama was Kitchener's crowning achievement in road march production. In melody, lyrics and rhythm, it was superlative. He had fun with our fears that in 1973, there would be no carnival because of an outbreak of polio. Then there are 1,000 voices who would settle for Sugar Boom Boom or Mama This Is Mars or My Pussin, and others still will swear by the road make to walk on Carnival Day. They would all be right, indicating the greatness of the Grand Master of Calypso, the Road March King of the world. I shall not bore you with the numbers of times he won the Road March, both from England and when he returned home in 1963. But here's one number which shocked even me. Of the 36 panorama competitions since 1963, steel bands playing Kitchener's compositions won 18 of those shows. Young people would call it awesome. Kitchener won the Calypso King title once in the 1970s, singing in an ode to pioneer Pan Man Winston Spree Simon. One of Kitchener's achievements was how he kept his music fresh over 60 years. He started singing in his hometown of Arima. His first recorded hit was something called Fig Leaf. He entered the Calypso ring in Port of Spain after World War II and started a new genre in Calypso, bringing melody and infectious rhythms to the old form handed down by executor Lyon and Attila. By the late 1940s, Kitchener had migrated to England. He spent 16 years singing and recording in the clubs and studios of London and Manchester. Kitchener was there in 1950 to lead a team of immigrant West Indians onto the hallowed turf of Lourdes, guitar in hand, strumming and singing celebration to the first ever West Indian victory over our colonial masters on their home territory. But by the early 1960s, Kitchener returned home to do battle with the young bard, the mighty Sparrow. And for the next 36 years, Kitchener demonstrated in Calypso why he will remain the grandmaster of the road march. But those who felt Kitchener did not sing social and political commentary need only to remember hits like Black and White, Soca Corruption, and in this year of our Lord 2000, the Grandmaster has left behind a biting political commentary which is certain to cause the government of the day many days of pain. Alwyn Roberts, Lord Kitchener, 1922 to February 2000, we shall never forget you. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
Trinidadian Prime Minister Basdeo Pandey's relationship with the local media is under scrutiny from groups like Amnesty International and Caribbean Justice. The latter has taken objection to what's described as Mr. Pandey's use of inflammatory language. Ken Richards has that story.
Caribbean Justice is apparently disturbed by what it refers to as the Prime Minister's "do them first before they do you" attitude. The organization says it can't forgive incidents in which persons in the media have been attacked because of the inflammatory rhetoric of Basdeo Pandey. Caribbean Justice Coordinator Sheila Simon has this advice for the Prime Minister.
In speaking publicly, we would just say moderate your language. Do not use aggressive terms such as "do them first before they do you." That gives a very clear message to people that you have to get in first, that people are your enemies. They're not your political opponents, they are your enemies, and it's almost like a warlike sort of statement that he makes.
For his supporters, Prime Minister Pandey's approach is bang on target. The impression they give is that as leader, what he chooses to do is the right way to go. But journalist Tony Fraser has sampled a different reaction from other sectors of the society.
Political constituencies against the UNC government, they feel that Mr. Pandey has gone too far. in terms of inciting violence against a lot of people. And then there are the political columnists and institutions which do not necessarily have a position. They feel also strongly about the position that Mr. Pandey has taken. They feel that the language is unnecessarily inflammatory.
The administration in Port of Spain appears more worried about what it sees as interference in the local politics of Trinidad and Tobago than in responding to the Caribbean Justice criticism. The Media Workers Association has apparently complained to Amnesty International about the Prime Minister's treatment of local media professionals. Amnesty representatives were in the country to probe this, prompting the suggestions out of government circles that the human rights group is breaking new ground and interfering in Trinidad's internal politics.
Ken Richards. Farmers throughout the Windward Islands are being warned to beware of an offer by WebDeco to buy fruit directly from them. As Pete Ninval reports, the warning has come from the National Farmers Association, which says the WebDeco offer is not genuine.
The president of the National Farmers Association, Patrick Ernest, says WebDeco's latest move has been prompted by the decision by the St. Lucia Banana Corporation to sell its fruit directly to Geest. This means that the SLBC will effectively be bypassing WebDeco. Mr. Ernest believes the SLBC's initiative may well create a groundswell of similar moves throughout the Windward Islands, leaving WebDeco, which was created by Windward governments to market fruit, without clients. Mr. Ernest feels that Windward Island farmers do not need a WebDeco in the islands, but believes WebDeco's role should be relegated to the United Kingdom, collecting marketing intelligence and lobbying. This view appears to be acquiring a following in the Windward Islands. Dominica's Prime Minister Rosie Douglas, who was in St. Lucia on a banana fact-finding mission, says WebDeco has failed the farmers of the islands. NFA President Patrick Ernest notes that Mr. Douglas's predecessor, Edison James, was a supporter of WebDeco. However, he suggests that with Mr. Douglas apparently taking an opposite view, and with the St. Lucia government already making it clear that there must be a change with WebDeco, the matter is practically a fait accompli. This is Pete Ninval in Castries, St. Lucia for BBC Caribbean Report.
A number of new developments have occurred at the Paradise Island trial in the Bahamas. Tanel McIntosh has pleaded not guilty to the murder of 24-year-old British tourist Joanne Clark. Debbie Nash reports on the testimony of a number of detectives who investigated the murder.
Two videotapes and their transcripts were entered into evidence Thursday afternoon as the trial of the man accused of the murder of Joanne Clark nears the end of its third week. The 24-year-old victim was discovered lying face down, partially covered with leaves, near a popular tourist beach near the multi-million-dollar Atlantis Resort on Paradise Island. The chief investigating officer, Detective Inspector Anthony Ferguson, testified that when Mr. McIntosh was first arrested for vagrancy on August 24th that year, 2 days after Ms. Clark's body was discovered, he denied any knowledge of her death. The investigating officer was told that the fresh scratches on his right cheek and on the back of his neck came from a basketball game. On the day Joanne Clark was murdered, the accused said he had been in a games room at a shopping center miles from Paradise Island. But the detective who rearrested him less than a month later says the statement he got during a voluntary videotaped interview by Tanel McIntosh reveals not only a murder confession by the accused, but also shows him leading officers to the site on Paradise Island where the murder was committed. Reporting from Nassau for BBC Caribbean Report, this is Debbie Nash.
In Jamaica, an outbreak of gastroenteritis has so far left 10 children dead and thousands suffering from the virus. Officials are denying that the figures are higher than usual. Karen Ware reports.
Since January 1st, across the 14 parishes of the island of Jamaica, more than 5,000 young children have been diagnosed as suffering from gastroenteritis, an infection of the stomach and intestines, whose common symptoms are vomiting, fever, and diarrhea. Ministry of Health Public Relations Officer Rosemary Lee has said that despite the alarming high numbers of infections and the death of 10 children, there is no need to panic.
At this time of the year, we usually have gastroenteritis problem, and we were hoping that, you know, that was our peak. So we are hoping that this is really the peak and that it will taper off to a smaller amount by the end of the month and for even next month as well.
Dr. Sonia Thomas, senior medical officer at Kingston's Bustamante Children's Hospital, who have had 5 deaths from gastroenteritis, says the rotavirus, which causes the disease, is more prevalent at this time of the year because of the cooler climate.
The same way you tend to see influenza at certain times of the year, usually in the cooler months, you know. The same way we tend to see the rotavirus. And there are other viruses beside it, but the rotavirus particularly is the one we see particularly at this time of the year.
In the meantime, the government has stepped up a public health campaign to educate people about the illness, which is usually spread through poor hygiene when preparing food. From Kingston, Jamaica, this is Karen Weir, the BBC Caribbean Report.
South Africa has been celebrating a landmark in their history. 10 years ago today, the world was gripped by the scenes of Nelson Mandela's release. The occasion was marked by the opening of a small museum in his home village in the Eastern Cape. Kimberly Andrew looks back at the legacy of a man who many believe is the greatest statesman in the world.
There are certain moments when the world collectively holds its breath and watches in amazement and disbelief as the course of history is suddenly changed forever. It happened when the Berlin Wall came down. A few months later, it happened again in South Africa.
And now Mr. Mandela walks through the gate. He's a free man as of this moment. He's waving his fist repeatedly in the air. He's smiling. He's a very alert, very imposing-looking figure, slightly graying hair, upright.
Today, the 81-year-old retired president played down his own contributions to the 1994 ending of apartheid, praising instead the African National Congress, ANC, and 3 centuries of freedom struggle that made it all possible. 10 years on, it all looks inevitable. Of course, once released, Nelson Mandela would negotiate military rule, would then be elected president. The ANC would be the party of power. The former apartheid rulers, the National Party, after a transitional period of power sharing, would gradually fade into obscurity. F.W. de Klerk, who was the president at the time, says that he has no regrets about his decision to release Mr. Mandela.
If I look back on all the major decisions I took, including the release of political prisoners, also of President Mandela, and the unbanning and the acceptance of the negotiated constitution with its imperfections, then I would have taken all the same major decisions again. I remain as sure today as I was then.
Wherever Mandela visits in the world, his audiences are humbled by him. In 1998, he attended the CARICOM Heads of State Summit in St. Lucia, where thousands of people came out to pay homage to him. One would be forgiven for thinking that it was only black South Africans that cite Mandela as a hero, but that simply is not the case. It was his vision of generosity and reconciliation which so inspired millions of people from all walks of life.
Kimberly Andrew. For many, the scene of Nelson Mandela's release was the greatest visible symbol of the dramatic change that South Africa would then go through. Keshla Shubani is a research officer at the Center for Policy Studies in Johannesburg.
It was unbelievable. We were forewarned, but having known and seen him in prison for a long period of time, I just didn't think it was going to happen fairly soon. And when I saw it, it took me some time to believe that Mandela was out.
Did he have an immediate impact?
Oh, yes. I mean, he caused a huge amount of excitement, and it took the country a few weeks, really, to realize that, one, Mandela was out, and secondly, we needed to think about the implications of his release and how things were going to unfold going forward.
So from there on in, the only way was up?
Up and down. A lot of blood was spilled in South Africa. A lot of people died. And the first attempt at negotiations failed quite badly. And he was very instrumental in picking up the pieces and focusing the country.
If there was one particular moment that you can remember about Mr. Mandela that will always stick in your mind, is there one?
When Chris Hani, the leader of the Communist Party, was murdered, Mandela was invited to, and the country was on a brink of a disaster that day. He went on to television and appealed for calm in the country, and he seemed to single-handedly turn people's minds away from seeking revenge, away from fighting, to focusing on the business at hand, which was negotiations and immediately setting a date for elections. That was a moment when lesser minds could have plunged South Africa into a terrible bloodshed from which we would not have recovered. And the second moment was when he was sworn in as state president. For me, that marked a fundamental change in the politics of our country. And I'm sure that memory is etched on the memories of lots and lots of people around the world.
Keshla Shubani ends today's edition of BBC Caribbean Report. I'm Emma Joseph, saying goodbye from London.